farmer once told me that you can't learn farming. She believes that to really get the hang of it, you have to grow up doing it. But a fledgling generation of brand new farmers may be putting that theory to the test. People who have never in their lives tilled soil, fed animals, or fenced in a pasture are going into farming from scratch. What's the draw for people without that personal connection to crops and land? I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're going to find out what being a brand new farmer is like. Living the dream or not so much? That's coming up after this news. Sarah Creech raises 900 chickens at Blue Yonder Organic Farm in Indiana. She says that for people just getting into farming, chickens are the gateway animal.
Once you have a chicken on a farm, then you end up getting sheep on the farm, and then you end up getting horses, and it just explodes from there.
Sarah came to farming after serving as a nurse in the Iraq War. When she came back, she suffered from PTSD. The nursing profession brought back too many memories, but farming seems to work for her.
I am getting out of bed every day, and I am doing my chores every day, and I'm taking care of animals every day. Like, people are relying on me. I don't know where my life is going to take me, but I feel like I'm on the right path.
It's not just veterans who are taking up farming as a second career. People are leaving all kinds of former selves behind to follow their farming dreams. What exactly do those dreams look like, and how does reality compare? Here at Central Standard, we've been wondering how the farming lifestyle is going for beginning farmers in our area. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we've got a couple of people in the studio with us this morning to tell us their stories. Brian Booty, good morning and welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning, Gina.
Brian is with us from Spoon Creek Organic Farm in Gardner, Kansas. And Brian, you used to be an air traffic controller?
Yes, right out of college, I signed on with the FAA and worked there for 26 years.
How long have you been farming now?
Full-time, 5 years now.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Dave Redfern is also here with us. He and his wife are engineers who have been farming for a few years now also. Their farm is called Where the Red Fern Grows. Hi, Dave. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, thank you.
I love the name of your farm.
Thanks. We had a lucky draw with the last name there. So
the reference to a children's book?
Yes.
How long have you been at it exactly?
Well, Where the Red Fern Grows has been in existence. This is the third season now. So.
And you still do some engineering too, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm farming on the side right now.
More on that shortly. Later in the show, we'll bring in a guy who offers mentorship and training to new fruit and vegetable farmers to help them get started. But first, let's hear Brian and Dave's stories. Brian, tell me about your life as an air traffic controller, the pressures you faced, and the interests and responsibilities you juggled.
Wow, that's, it was the
some
most...
Some of your whole life before farming.
Right. It was just the most interesting job you could have. Every day was different. Depending on what the weather was. There was an intense three-year training program that was pass-fail the whole way. So at any failure is not an option when you're talking to airplanes.
So like a B is just fail.
Exactly. It was either you got it right or we'll see you later. We'll get somebody else to do this. So
that's pretty intense, but understandably so.
Right, exactly. The general public's at risk all the time, so it wasn't that intense. They trained you very well, and they had alarm systems and everything that would go off and help you out, but it was always better not to have to use those.
Yeah. Well, so how long had you done that training? You said 3 years. Was this like a lifelong dream?
No. It was, I got out of college and was looking for a job, and it just happened to coincide with, I don't want to tell my age, but President Reagan had just fired all the air traffic controllers, so there was openings, and I went and took a test and passed the test, and they gave me the call, and I was making ice cream at the time at a dairy in Shawnee. It seemed like, and the owner said, go take a shot. I'll have a job for you if you come back.
When did the first thought occur to you about farming? I mean, do you remember where you were and what you were doing? Because this sounds, other than the weather dependency, it sounds pretty different from farming.
It's completely different from farming. According to my mom, the first time I made the decision to be a farmer was my birthday's in October, so I had the option of starting kindergarten early or staying on the farm with my grandpa and helping him. And I chose to stay and help grandpa. So when I was young, I chose it.
And then had you forgotten about that?
It had become a job, and it was hard work for a kid, and I decided I did not like that. And then towards the last part of my air traffic control career, I started doing it again on the side, and it was just so relaxing to get outside, and I just got back into it.
When you started doing it on the side, do you remember what inspired that?
Yeah, 15 tomato plants turned into 50, turned into 150, turned into 500.
So you were just starting it again as a hobby.
Right, just to have some vegetables in the kitchen. I happen to live on 20 acres, so I had plenty of space, so every time I wanted to expand, that wasn't a problem.
How much of an idea did you already have about what life was like on a working farm?
I was almost completely clueless, really.
Because you mentioned being on your grandparents' farm as a kid, but that's just like kid visits more than a lifestyle immersion?
Yeah, I could get up and go in the morning and ride on the tractor and help for a while, and then I could go back home and walk away from it. And I always wondered why is Grandpa always out in the garden? And now I know.
Well, what were your first steps when you went from hobbyist to professional?
I had some friends in town in Gardner, and they were going to start up the Gardner Farmers Market, and I had a fairly good-sized home garden. So I was just going to go in and do the farmers market thing, and then it grew to, hey, let's do two or three farmers markets. But as my garden grew, I had really less time for the farmers market. So now everything I grow, I wholesale out. I don't have time, since I don't have employees, to do the farming and to go and set at farmers markets for 20 or 25 hours a week also.
So tell me about what you grow.
We do heirloom tomatoes is our main crop, and that's how I met Dr. Rivard. He came out and helped us with some tomato trials. We do potatoes, just straight Pontiac Reds and Yukon Golds. We do a crop of onions every year. I have about 3,000 asparagus plants, so that always gets us jump-started in the spring. It's just coming up right now, so that's a good time of the year.
And you just mentioned Kerry Rivard. We'll be hearing from him shortly. But now I do want to turn to Dave Redfern. What would you say to someone with no real farming background to speak of who's just now beginning to dream about farming as a career? Because this is something that happened to you. Do you think that you would have words of wisdom?
Well, it definitely describes me. I don't know about wisdom or not. I'm still I'm pretty green. But it's like Brian said, it's a lot more work than you could probably ever expect. I was just talking to my son the other day about all the things that were broken. We just said, like, let's list all the things we know of that are broken on the farm right now that need to go get fixed. And we stopped at a dozen things, you know, the tractor, the truck, the chicken house door, you know, all the things that are broken. So.
And fixing things, is that your job since it's your farm?
For sure. There's nobody else. So that's what it falls to. So I think as a farmer, you have to be a jack of all trades. You can't pay people to do anything, really. You got to figure it out yourself.
Before you got into farming, you were an engineer. You still are, actually.
Yes.
But talk to me about your life as an engineer before farming entered the picture.
Well, actually, if you don't mind, I'd probably go back a little bit further than
Please.
That. I got into it because my wife and I spent 5 years in China. We were teaching English at a university there in rural China.
And this is before you were an engineer?
Well, actually, in between. I was an engineer. My wife and I both worked at the same manufacturing facility, and then we had this opportunity to go to China, and we did. Anyway, we really loved it there. And one of the things we really enjoyed was just a more community atmosphere. It seemed like everybody knew each other, even though it was very, very tightly packed, lots of people. But you would go to street side markets and buy your vegetables for the day. People didn't have refrigerators. If they did, it was like a dorm size fridge. So you had to buy that day's food that day. And so there were farmers that came in with bamboo shoulder poles and baskets, and they brought whatever they'd harvested that day. And we got used to these incredibly fresh vegetables and a lot of variety of different things, Asian stuff that we'd never seen before in the United States. I really appreciated that. So when we got back to America, we missed it. And we looked around in the grocery stores, and, man, it just wasn't that fresh. You know, it'd been flown in from California, many days old or whatever. And a lot of the varieties and things we were used to weren't there. So
what year are we talking about?
That was 2008 when we returned. So so we started growing a garden, just like Brian, kind of just on our own. I'm sort of a kind of person that never does things halfway. So I planted a big garden in the suburbs in Blue Springs, took half the yard away, planted fruit trees. I had about 30 fruit trees and bushes in the front yard, and the neighbors thought I was crazy.
How did they express that to you? Did they just say, sir, we believe you're crazy?
Not quite. They called me Farmer Dave, even though I was in the suburbs there.
So they anointed you.
Yeah, and they gave me all their leaves in the fall. So it was an established neighborhood. There were lots of leaves. So I composted everybody's stuff from the whole neighborhood. And so they didn't have to pay a composting fee. And I had free organic matter for my vegetables. So
that's some of how you got your start, but I am curious about your lifestyle as an engineer.
Sure.
Because I'm guessing that it's fairly different now that farming is part of the picture, and I want to get a sense of that contrast.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I still work as an engineer at a local manufacturing facility. It's 24/7 operation, so I get calls in the middle of the night sometimes, different times. The really good thing is, after we grew out of space in Blue Springs, we found a little 15-acre place in Independence, and so we moved there. And it happens to be about 2 miles from where I work, so it's pretty handy. If I do have to go to work in the middle of the night, I'm not gone too long.
It sounds like most of your motivation has to do with the end product, the food that's on your own table. Was anything else going on as part of this decision as well? I mean, because it's not just having different food on your table, it's a different career that you're pursuing now.
Sure. I think it started with the food on our own table, and that's actually how we started doing a CSA, basically a vegetable co-op. When we were in Blue Springs, we had this big garden, and all these, you know, our friends would come over and enjoy dinner with us, and they wanted in on it too. So we started selling shares even then. And then just the opportunity to share that with other people, help connect the public to their food supply, help them understand where their food comes from, and sort of be part of a community. That's what we're after.
Did you or your wife come from farming families?
No, not at all. So this is really new. I'm with these other guests here. I think I have a lot to learn, so I've been listening a lot.
When was your upbringing, like urban, suburban?
Suburban Kansas City, yeah. I mean, we had a little bitty vegetable garden, you know, 10 by 20 or something growing up. I always loved that. But that was the extent of what I knew about farming.
How did your family respond when they saw you taking this new direction? Were they surprised?
Yeah, they were pretty surprised. My mother-in-law is always concerned I'll never be able to go on vacation again, which is maybe true. She loves vacations. So now that we have dairy cow and dairy goats and twice a day milking and, you know, all the chores, we can't really ever leave. So, but we have 5 children, and we enjoy being together on the farm. You know, we might not be able to go to Colorado, but we can enjoy the great outdoors right there and a lot of fun stuff and time together.
Did anything about the reality of farming catch you by surprise?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I didn't have any example growing up to watch, so most of what I knew going into it was from books that I read. There's a lot of great organic farmers out there that provide resources and things, but there's only so much you can learn from a book. And then when you see it firsthand, you can be surprised.
Can you give me an example of something where your book learning had its limits and you had to learn firsthand?
Sure. Well, I think one of the most difficult things I think about farming is knowing when to harvest things. It seems silly, but you know, when you got tomatoes at home, you wait till they're perfectly ripe and then you harvest them. But on a farm, you can't do that. They won't survive any kind of packaging that way. So you have to harvest them at just the right time so they can be exactly ripe when the customers want them. And that takes some getting used to, and I don't think there's any amount of reading that can do it. you harvest a few when they rot, and then you say, whoops, that was too early or too late.
Brian, what about you? How did the reality of farming compare to what you had envisioned early on?
Just to touch on that, and even picking your fruit early, then to try to sell it to somebody and say, you just set it on your counter for 2 days. No, that's not ripe. I'm not taking it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard part of it, too. So there's really is a timing effect there. The biggest reality for me probably is you can read any book, and it'll tell you how to get rid of pests and how to get rid of weeds. Mother Nature has a way of just fighting that so intensely. It's a constant battle, and especially with the weeds, trying Amen. To do it organically, and the bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the biggest surprise. You read, oh, I can do this, and it'll take care of the bugs. And if anybody has any idea of how to get rid of squash bugs or cucumber beetles, you're a millionaire today if you know that secret.
Did you have any moments early on that were like, oh, my God, what have I done, where you just felt totally out of your element?
Yeah, and it's to touch on a piece that Dave gave us. We went on a vacation for a week and a half at the beginning of June, and oh, my gosh. Of course, everything's growing at that time of the year. Well, you leave, you get everything cleaned up, and the weeds are all in at bay, and you come back 2 weeks later, and it's almost impossible to catch up. It is impossible to catch up.
So the reality just that, like, you were never going to be able to stop.
Yep, and, you can't go away, especially if you have the animals on the farm. But even in the garden, you have to – they're living creatures. You have to check them every day, and mm-hmm. they will tell you when they're sick or when they're having problems. But you have to go out and look at them, and then they tell you.
So I dabbled in farming for a summer, and I can point to a specific moment when the newness of the situation just came crashing down all at once, and I felt totally ill-equipped. But of course, because of the nature of the work, I was alone in a field with no choice but to get myself together and find a solution. Did you have a moment like that early on?
Yeah, I think, Brian's touching on some good stuff. It's really the weeds and the bugs that make it difficult. If it weren't for those, everybody would be farming. But I think... there was one time when we had first moved to our new place. It was our first season. First time I was farming with a tractor and gardening on something larger than just a home garden scale. And the weeds got away from me. I didn't count on how fast they would grow and how many I could hoe, you know, how many rows I could hoe in a short period of time. So as they grow, you know, you get a rain at just the right time, and the weeds seem pretty small. Well, I'll get those tomorrow, and then something else comes up, and you put that off for a couple of days, and then, boy, I remember one time I had to take off 3 days from work, from my real day job, and do nothing but hoe and pull weeds that were getting knee-high. You know, they were too big to hoe, and it was just hand-pulling just to save the crop, because I'd already basically sold the crop and
what is
through
the length?
A CSA.
How long is the day that we're talking about? Because when you say take 3 whole days, I mean, when do those days start and end on
a farm? It's sun up to sundown, and sometimes in the dark, too. I mean, I've got lights on my tractor, so if I can do something on the tractor, I'll do that at night, you know, with a headlight while I save daylight for the work I have to do.
Tell me about your first real triumph, Dave.
First triumph. I think last year was a really cool thing. It was the first time I had a high tunnel. Most people call them a greenhouse, but it's an unheated greenhouse. You know, I'd read a lot in books about how great these were, but I was able to experience it firsthand through my pepper crop. Green peppers sweet peppers are kind of hard to grow. A lot of people, you don't get much yield on them. My outdoor peppers didn't do very well last year, but the ones in the tunnel produced, I'd say, 10 times the amount of peppers as my plants outdoors, which was incredible to me. So,
what about your first triumph, Brian?
It's probably related to my high tunnel also.
And that's just an unheated greenhouse?
An unheated greenhouse, and then I use some floating row cover in there. It helps extend the growing season. We're putting our tomatoes in this week in the high tunnel. But in the fall, the first year I had it, I didn't have it in time to get the tomatoes into it. And in the fall, I planted spinach and lettuce in there. And on Christmas, I was cutting salad
mm-hmm.
with the use of that high tunnel and the floating row cover inside there. And there's nothing better than fresh salad in the at Christmas time.
Did you have to train yourself to think differently as a farmer?
Yes. I always thought of myself as a worker, but it's like Dave said, you can't sit around in the morning, and you walk back in the house at 9:15 in the heat of the summer, and you're tired. It's a happy tired, but it strains the family life a little bit.
How so? Just that you're not present, even though you're right outside?
Well, with my job at the K-State Extension and then my garden, and I also help in community garden and gardener, I go from morning at K-State, afternoon at my place, and then evenings at the community garden. I don't see – the kids think I'm sometimes AWOL, so I try to take a few moments now and then and give them the attention that they need and deserve.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dave, your website says engineers favor efficiency, economies of scale, and the man-made chemicals science has introduced. Do you feel a tension between the thinking of engineering and the thinking of organic farming?
I think for sure. I mean, generally, farming has been taken over by economies of scale, big agriculture, big business. You know, as an engineer, I feel kind of like part of that. That's what I do all day as an engineer, is trying to figure out how to be more efficient. I still try to figure out how to be more efficient as a farmer, but I do it in a different way. You know, I try to work with nature and some of those things like technologies like high tunnels, floating row covers. Those are new technologies that weren't available to farmers in the past, but they also are really just an extension of nature. You're extending the growing season by providing a microclimate that's slightly warmer, protecting from wind, protecting from torrential downpours when you don't want them. So I think I'm still working on that efficiency aspect. Certainly when you're trying to make a living doing it, you realize you need to, well, I got to pick faster than this if I want to, you know, I can't sell tomatoes for $20 a pound, so I got to pick them faster, figure out a way to do this.
So you've got to find a way to make the hours of labor equal the money coming in somehow.
Yeah, I'll be glad when I make minimum wage.
Well, that brings me to a next question about success. For you, would success mean being able to get out of the engineering business?
Yeah, I hope my boss isn't listening. No, I think he is, actually. Hey, boss. Yeah, that would be success. I would love to be able to do that. Right now, it seems so far away. There's a lot of growers. Some of you guys probably read them, too. But Elliot Coleman, Joel Salatin, some authors and that are organic farmers. You know, Joel Salatin says you got to go full bore. You know, don't work a side job. Work full time on the farm. That's the only way to be successful. And man, I'd love to, but I don't have the faith in myself to just jump off the deep end like that. So we're growing little by little, but it is really hard. You know, I'm away at work all day. There's only so many hours of daylight to come home, and man, I'm gonna be out in the field till after dark.
What, just in the day-to-day, what does success look like to you as a new farmer? Like, what's a good day and what's a bad day?
I think, you know, one of the things I enjoy is people come out to the farm, volunteers, CSA members come out, and part of the CSA is being a member is getting involved in the farm work. So I really enjoy having those members come and other just volunteers from the community that want to get out there. I think they always go home more sore than they thought they would. But it's a really good time to work alongside people with a hoe in hand and talking about life, helping people see, you know, where things come from, how hard it is to actually grow the things that they're enjoying, how the weeds are threatening always to overtake everything. It's a good time.
What does success look like to you? A good day.
Well, a good day for me is every morning I get up and I have a mental checklist of these are the things that I need to accomplish today. And it's a rare day when that checklist gets completed. So that's a huge successful day if my checklist at the end of the day, especially if there's some daylight left, if my checklist gets done. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
I want to talk to you about what intervenes shortly, but Central Standard is going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll get thoughts on bigger trends. It used to be all about getting off the farm. What's the deal with city people wanting to get on the farm? Call 816-235-2888 if you have a farming fantasy. What's it all about? And do you think you'll really do it? We'll be back in a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard, and today's show is all about new farmers. Most of the new farmers out there are not young people taking over family farms, but first-generation farmers starting totally from scratch. We've been hearing from Brian Booty, an air traffic controller turned farmer from Kansas, and Dave Redfern, who's still juggling his farming career with his engineering career. Now I'd like to welcome Kerry Rivard to the conversation. He's the fruit and vegetable extension specialist at K-State, and he runs the Growing Growers program, specifically geared toward helping first-generation farmers get acclimated. Hi, Kerry.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Well, tell me, first of all, about Growing Growers.
So Growing Growers is actually a partnership program between Kansas State University, University of Missouri Extension, Lincoln University, Cultivate Kansas City, and the Kansas Rural Center. And what we do is a couple different things. Our main mission is really to help develop new farmers. So we have a few different components. The flagship component is our apprenticeship program. So each year we get applications from mainly young people, but not always young people, to be apprentices on local farms. And what we do is we actually help communicate with our host farmers, and we set up our apprentices with host farmers. So every year there's anywhere from 10 to 15 apprentices that we actually help locate on typically organic farms.
Do these apprentices tend to actually be helpful to the host farmers, or is it more, just someone with no experience who needs a lot of guidance? And there's so much, as we've just been hearing, there's so much to be done on a farm, and one person can only be in one place on a large plot of land at one time.
So we have an apprenticeship coordinator named Laura Christensen, who also runs Blue Door Farm, and she could probably tell you all kinds of stories about, you know, horror stories of host farms reporting back about their apprentices. But yeah, you know, some of the apprentices are really good and are huge help. Some of them go on to start their own farms. Some of them drop out real fast once they realize how difficult farming is.
When did you first perceive that there were enough new farmers out there trying to make a go of it that a program like this would fill a significant need?
Well, you know, it wasn't actually myself that started this program. The program was really started by a grassroots movement from several of our activists in the area, including Catherine Kelly and Daniel Dremitzel, and then at the time, Ted Carey, who was at Kansas State University in the position that I have now. And my understanding is that basically they had a conversation at the Rosedale Farmers Market one day that said, you know what, we have a lot more customers here than we have farmers, and what can we do to develop new farmers?
So it wasn't that there were tons of people out there trying to become farmers. It was that there was like a market for it.
Exactly. It's a consumer-driven market. And so the consumers were showing up to farmers' markets. Their trucks, the farmers were running out of produce too fast to really maintain it. And knowing that it takes a critical mass of, you know, a sizable market to really drive the thing, the growers said, you know, we need competitors, basically, so that we can get this critical mass going.
Who are you meeting through this program? I mean, what are some of the typical stories behind that decision to take up farming with no background in it whatsoever?
Certainly the two most typical stories are the ones right here in this room. And it's probably split up about half and half. We have several folks in the program who have college degrees, right? And they've started jobs, you know, doing whatever their degree calls for, and decided maybe it's not the right thing for them or that they want to get into farming, kind of similar to what Dave's been talking about. And then we also have a very sizable group of folks that are similar to Brian. They're looking to get into farming after they've finished a career in the office or in a more traditional career. And so they're looking to use farming both as a way maybe to ease into retirement and also maybe to find a little bit of personal happiness related to their career.
Perhaps my eyes deceive me, though, but Brian, you don't appear to be at the end of a career. I mean, you were talking about graduating from college in the Reagan years. That's not quite.
I'm 55. Air traffic controllers are mandated to retire at age 56. So
wow.
I could have stayed a few more years, but for health reasons, it took me about 3 months after I retired, and then I was so much healthier. I didn't realize it at the time until I got out of the rat race, how much it was affecting how I felt day to day. And I wasn't sick all the time. I just feel so much better now.
But Kerry, getting out of the rat race, is that a common motivation? Would you summarize it that way?
Absolutely. Yep.
So, and farming is not a rat race?
Farming is definitely a rat race, but it's a little bit more of a rat race that you might have a little bit more control over, at least on some days. I don't know, Brian and Dave might disagree with me. I think a lot of it for some people is just being able to be your own boss and run your own business is part of it. I know my parents actually have a very similar story to Brian. My dad was an administrator at a non-for-profit organization here in Kansas City, and he basically retired early after 20 years to start a small greenhouse business. And so for him, you know, a lot of it was just he was fed up with the rat race, essentially, and the commute and all the things that go along with it, and he really wanted to work for himself.
Is it your sense that people are finding what they're looking for in farming when they do this?
Wow, that's a great question. I think people probably find what they're looking for about, what do you guys think, about 20 minutes a year, something like that. You know, there's moments in farming, and I'm a wannabe farmer for sure. I help run a research station, and I work with growers all the time. I don't have my own farm exactly. But there's moments in farming that can't be described and are better than you would get from any other career. I'm lucky enough to be in the position where I still get to reach those moments sometimes, but it's not my own farm and I don't have to deal with the risk. But it's certainly on a day-to-day basis challenging for sure.
Brian, how would you answer that question?
I think it's very possible for anybody to reach their goals because of what Dave and I talked about earlier. You start small, you can grow to a size. It's just like the Peter principle. Once you get too big, you realize it, and you can always size back and get to a very comfortable spot. Or you can continue to grow if you really like it and you want to get into the management part of it, then you start hiring people. So yeah, it's frustrating because at first you want to do it all. But as soon as you learn that it's impossible to do it all, you pick, I'm going to do these four crops because I can manage them.
And Dave, as far as finding what you're looking for, it sounds like you were looking for a different kind of food on your own table. Have you found what you were looking for in that sense?
Oh, I've got plenty of food now. in that sense, we certainly have. We enjoy eating, you know, incredibly healthy food. So, I mean, we pretty much don't go to the grocery store anymore except for, you know, some grains and things like that. I haven't branched out into wheat. I probably won't grow wheat. You know, as far as vegetables, milk, eggs, meat, you know, we pretty much have it covered.
Are there other things you were looking for that you haven't quite found yet?
I think I'm learning a lot. This is going into my third season right now as actual business. And, you know, I still need to learn to make a profit. I think what Brian mentioned about how you can grow kind of as quickly as you want. You can always scale back if you want. I think that's very true. And I think but the only way it's true is if you don't take out huge loans and things like that. I'm a big proponent of doing everything by cash. So we just kind of grow as we have the money to do it. So because you certainly take a huge risk if you take out a lot of loans, and then there's no turning back. You have to keep doing it even if you hate it. So that's always in the back of my mind. You know what, I'm gonna build this thing, but it's gonna be multi-purpose, you know. So if I decide, you know, I have a walk-in cooler that I built, but if I decide this isn't for me, I can still use it for something else. So
why is it so hard to make a profit in farming? What's the obstacle there?
Brian, you probably could answer that question better than I can.
Basically for Dave, I think it's probably how long he's been in it, because farming is a lot of upfront costs. For me, I've got all my web trays in place. I've got my Pro 50 trays that I can plant into, and those are all reusable. But for my first 4 years, I was in Dave's position where every year I had to buy more things so that I had what I needed. And just these past 2 years now, I'm in the black, not a whole bunch. I'm not rich for it, but I'm operating in the black now, and that's wonderful. And yeah, it's because I've already got all the hardware in place. So Dave's still in the, I need this. I need a two-bottom plow.
Right, exactly. Tractor implements, you know, high tunnels, components, yeah. So it all adds up.
Your labor and what you can sell from it does not yet equal all the stuff you need to keep making it happen.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely not getting paid for my labor. That's free.
Carrie, is this a pretty common scenario?
Absolutely. What Dave's describing is what I trying to view as something similar to vapor lock in our vehicles these days. And it's really common for new and first generation growers. There's a certain amount of produce you can grow, take it to the farmer's market, and do relatively well if you want to sell $1,000 worth of produce a week. But if you really want to scale up and start tapping wholesale markets, moving into grocery stores, you know, some of those things, then it takes a certain amount of equipment that you have to invest in. And that's a big decision for a lot of our first generation growers. Many of them come from backgrounds where they may not have a lot of cash. And quite frankly, many of them have a very similar culture to the one Dave just described. They don't want to go into the red by getting a big loan. And so they sort of get caught between the farmer's market and the wholesale without a way to, you know, move up and scale up.
What are some of the skills people don't realize they're going to need when they go into farming? Are there skills that are, I mean, I would assume people know that they're going to need to be able to, like, bend over and dig holes and stuff, but other skills?
Yeah, so management is a big part of it. Farming takes a lot of labor, and we have a lot of our first-generation growers are really wanting to do it, kind of like Brian, where it's basically themselves and maybe one other person. But as you scale up and get bigger, and if you want to bring in enough gross revenue to really sustain a business, it's going to require some employees. And so you're going to have to, you know, hire some workers, do that kind of thing. And then technically speaking for growing, you know, many of our growers are already pretty good growers. They've had gardeners, they've had gardens, they've experienced growing plants, but scaling it up to the level where you can harvest 2,000 pounds of tomato before noon, you know, is a whole different ballgame. And so putting those systems in place takes a lot. And quite frankly, knowing some of the tools and options that are out there and available is also a big challenge, especially here in this part of the country, because we don't have a lot of history of vegetable production, at least within the last 50 years here in the Kansas City metro area.
Well, I am interested in that. Your focus is on fruits and vegetables, and you do this in Kansas. How is Kansas for growing fruit in particular?
Right. So, yeah, I actually graduated from North Carolina State University about 4 years ago, and I'd grown up in the Kansas City area, but I never expected that for my job as a plant pathologist working on tomatoes that I would ever come back home, you know, because there's not a huge commercial industry here. I told a friend of mine that I was moving to the desert to become a shipbuilder, you know. but the reality is we actually have a booming community of growers in this area because there's this revitalization and this need for local food. And so there's a lot of folks just like Dave and Brian trying to get into the business, trying to start a farm and looking for that lifestyle.
Is there a question you think people should ask themselves long and hard before they decide to take up farming?
Well, I don't know if there's a certain question to ask yourself, but I do think that you need to get some experience before you just jump right into it. You know, and that's one of the things we really value about the Growing Growers program, and one of the things that we like about it is it gives our apprentices a chance to get on a farm, hook up with a couple of mentors that are working in the field, and see what it takes to pick 200 pounds of green beans, because it's no small task, that's for sure.
Do you have people who start your program and then just say, you know what, forget it. I'm not starting a farm. This isn't what I thought I was getting into. I will just have a pot with a plant in it, and that'll do.
Absolutely, we do. And we're actually currently doing a survey of all of our apprenticeship graduates to see what they're up to and if they've started farms. But we oftentimes have apprentices that drop out through the season or get done with the season and decide they don't want to do it. And it sounds counterintuitive, but I actually see that as a bit of a success story. You know, as an advocate for the local food system, the last thing that I want is for somebody to start a farm, not be able to do it, and then you have an empty booth at the farmer's market every weekend. That doesn't reflect very well on our local growers if that kind of thing is happening. So if we can use this program as a way for people to try it out, and if they're not ready for it, you know, then, you know, they can walk away and we don't end up with empty booths at the farmer's market.
Brian and Dave, I want to get each of your thoughts on, I mean, have there been moments where you have wondered if you made the right choice, if you're really cut out for this?
No, not really. It's been very easy for me because I've had a career and I've already ended it and I've got a retirement in place and I've got a great partnership with my wife, Monica. She's the money person. I'm the spender. She's the saver. So, and that works very, very well. So I'm not dependent upon this. I'm doing this basically for myself and to help put my kids through school. They a little bit extra. And I know I can always scale it back whenever I need to. So I'm in a unique situation where I don't need it, and I haven't mortgaged the farm basically to get to this point. So it's comfortable for me.
Dave, any doubts ever?
Oh, I think I have doubts probably every other week or so whenever a big setback happens on the farm. It's like, what have I gotten myself into, you know? I think...
Can you describe a big setback for me?
Sure. Last fall, Brian mentioned a couple of the bugs that are kind of our all farmers' arch nemesis around here, the cucumber beetle and the squash bug. And those are enemies I've been fighting for a long time. I read in a book that guineas will eat squash bugs, but they don't. I have guinea hens. They don't eat them. they fly all around. They eat the ticks, though, so that's good. But I was used to those, but there was a bug that I had never seen. And again, I'm new, but I'd been growing, you know, vegetables for 4 years before that. And I'd never seen a harlequin beetle before. And a harlequin bug. And a harlequin bugs just showed up last fall in my broccoli plants. And Brian mentioned you have to be out there every day kind of monitoring things. And I saw a few of these bugs. And again, because I have a full-time job, I don't have all the time in the world to just be out there a lot. So sometimes it goes a few days without checking up on things. And so I saw some of these strange bugs. I wasn't sure what they were. And I probably went a week after seeing the first one before I decided to really look into them. And it was too late. I mean, they had wiped out about 1,000 broccoli plants, and I was just devastated.
Central Standard's off to one last break. There's still time to participate in today's conversation about farming. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. We are picking right back up with our discussion about new farmers. Many of them are second career farmers, and they're coming to the profession with more ideas about farming than experience in farming. We're hearing how it's been going, and I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard. Our guests have been farmers Dave Redfern and Brian Booty, as well as Carrie Rivard from Kansas State University's Agriculture Extension, where he runs a program called Growing Growers. And Carrie, there's an event coming up, an open house. That's the last Saturday in July. What would an aspiring farmer get out of attending that event?
Yeah, so we have an annual open house out at the research station the last Saturday in July. That event is marketed towards consumer and public. And they get a chance to see any of our research trials. We have numerous high tunnels, variety trials, all kinds of things going on out there, as well as some of our no-till work and our strawberry work. We also have a commercial growers field day on August 10th as well.
You know, I mentioned earlier in the show a farmer I know who believes that you can't just pick up farming. She grew up on the farm that she now runs, and she's convinced that that's the only way to do it. Obviously, you believe in new farmers, but is there something to be said for learning the rhythms and the lifestyle as a child?
Absolutely, definitely. And I come from somewhat of a farming background because my folks had a greenhouse business. So, you know, I probably take that for granted a little bit sometimes.
On the other hand of that, are there things that newfangled kinds of farmers who come from other kinds of backgrounds bring to the profession that could change it or that add advantages? Do those things balance out?
Oh, definitely. And we have a lot of really innovative growers in this area, and many of them come from, you know, very diverse backgrounds like you've heard about today. And I think it just makes the conversation that much more productive.
But when you mentioned that there are things that maybe you would pick up as a child if you were observing these things, what kinds of things are we talking about?
Little things. You can't go on vacation, or when you do, it needs to be, you know, when the temperatures are below 30 degrees. You know, things like understanding that when you get up in the morning, you got to go out and you got to water the plants. And that has to happen on Saturdays and Sundays and Easter Sundays and all those kinds of things.
What kinds of things would you observe what things have you observed new farmers bringing to the table?
Well, you know, I think one of the really cool things that's going on among many of our local growers is just all the enthusiasm and the energy that they bring. And, you know, I think Dave is a really good example of that here today. There's a lot of farmers that are coming to the plate, not just because they want to make money, but because they want to really change our local food system. And so some of those innovations aren't necessarily in how they weed their tomatoes, but it's how they market their crops. We have a really innovative grower up in Kearney, Missouri, who has a Fair Share CSA farm, and they actually have all their shareholder members come up and volunteer on the farm, just like Dave mentioned. And man, that's just a really innovative way to, A, you know, get rid of some of your labor constraints, and B, help bring the public into the venue of how to grow food. So there's a lot of really cool things like that going on.
Dave Redfern of Where the Redfern Grows, do you notice any tension between newfangled farmers like yourself and some of the old school farmers in your community?
I don't know about tension. I think I have a lot to learn from other farmers that have been around a while. A lot of farmers that have been around a while that I've seen don't use organic practices. They'll spray it with anything. Some do, but I still have a lot to learn from those guys as well, just on how to trellis tomato plants. And I think, you know, they have a different market that they're going toward. And so we're not really even in direct competition, so we can really cooperate with those people very well.
But is there a culture of farming that you feel you've integrated into very comfortably?
You know, I need to get more into this. I think I kind of just grew. My story is just really a garden grown big and continuing to grow larger. And so just meeting with these guys, you know, makes me think I really need to get more connected with other growers, you know, even through the Growing Growers program, to be part of that community. I'm not an outsider by choice. It's just sort of I haven't made those connections yet.
Let's talk to Gina in Atchison, Kansas. Welcome to Central Standard.
Good morning.
What can you share with us? What's your story?
Well, we bought a 20-acre property in town here in Atchison just 2 years ago for the specific purpose of farming it and growing organic fruits and vegetables for our town. And we found not so much tension with the local farmers, but there's not a huge market for the organic produce here, and so it's growing very quickly now. And what we bring to the table is a lot of new ideas, energy, the social media things. Since we didn't come from a farming background, we bring a lot of that kind of thing.
So knowledge of the customer, maybe? Is that what you're kind
right.
of saying?
Knowledge of the customer and knowledge of the younger crowd and what they're looking for, and kind of bringing that those generations into food in general, especially in the rural communities.
Well, thanks so much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Carrie, is that something that new to the profession do tend to offer?
Absolutely. So we work with some growers near Edgerton, the Gehringer family, Gehringer's Orchard, and they have 10 acres of U-pick peaches, 4 acres of U-pick strawberries, and 5 acres of U-pick blackberries. So they require people to come out and pick their produce. And Bryce told me last year, the son for the farm, that they did not spend a single dollar on advertising. They did it all through Facebook and social media. So,
wow.
So absolutely, that's another good example of innovative thinking among many of our first-generation growers.
Brian, if you were going to start your farm all over again, if you could have a redo, is there anything that you would do differently now that you've had this early experience?
I'd like to say yeah, because I've had all kinds of mistakes and everything, but I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if I hadn't made those mistakes. There's no way to do everything right the first time in this, and there's so many different ways to do everything that you have to try and fail and try and succeed before you're really sure what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Dave, what about you? Is there anything that you would do differently if you were starting over again?
Well, I maybe start a little earlier. I think, just like Brian said, you can't be afraid of failure. There are so many failures every year. So if you're a perfectionist and things have to be just so, this isn't the thing for you because there's so many things out of your control.
If there was one thing that I could change, I tried to do everything from the beginning. I was growing carrots and peas and everything. if somebody would have said, pick two or three things and focus on that and get good at that, and then you can expand, that probably would have been the best piece of advice I could have gotten when I first started out. Grow a little bit of everything for yourself, but in mass, you can only do so many things well.
That idea about, Dave, you were just saying that being a perfectionist, this is not a career for perfectionists. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, it's just, there's failures everywhere you turn around. And, you know, if you take the time to make everything perfect, to make that fence line just exactly right, you know, to make that road just perfect, you know, you don't have time for that. You just get it close and get it done and move on to the next thing. You've got an infinite list of to-do items, and none of them are going to be perfect.
Just do the work, it sounds like. Well, our time is up. Dave Redfern of Where the Redfern Grows, it's been a real pleasure hearing your story. Best of luck to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brian Booty of Spoon Creek Organic Farm, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Gina.
Carrie Rivard, thanks for making the trip.
Thank you.
Carrie has joined us from K-State's Agricultural Extension. You can listen back to this show at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. Sign up for our podcast while you're there. Tomorrow, we'll revisit a previous conversation about safety for members of Kansas City's LGBTQ community. Join that discussion tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's The Standard. Now let's join Steve Kraske at Kaufman Stadium next on Up to Date.